first of all, Jesus, I want to start with Jesus. Don't strain at gnats and swallow camels. Go for what's important. Just think that's so important and so ignored in all kinds of areas. I'm fairly convinced this is important. So since 1914, 200 million people have died in wars and through weapons. A similar number have been seriously injured. Probably a million have been traumatized. We must be aware of war trauma now, especially in relation to Ukraine, but it's been around for the whole century from the First World War onwards, and we only need to recognize that Hitler was one of those traumatized to see just how crucial this is to the whole of civilization. And probably, I've tried this calculation all kinds of ways. It's complex, but probably 10 to 15% of the total world economy was wiped out in the 20th century. I'm fairly sure that World War II cost 10 years of fairly total evacuation of GDP. And so it's probably about 15%. So we're not talking about marginal changes. We're talking about something that's fundamental to the whole situation of the world and the world economy. And staying with Jesus, it seems to me fairly clear in all the details that Jesus had summed the situation up. The one-liner, and his one-liners are very, very important, is those who take the sword perish by the sword. And that fairly clearly suggests that militarism doesn't work. And militarism, I think, we will find hasn't worked time and time again. So we're into the subject. We're not just discussing whether we impose sanctions on Russia, but we're discussing the whole military situation over the last 150 years of industrialized weapons, and it's involved all kinds of processes. And maybe through not following Christ, the world has gone seriously wrong. And I just want to flag up one philosophical point that I think is important. We are fed the idea that actually militarism is realistic and peace is idealistic. Of course, militarism isn't realistic. Wars do not work. In the First World War, they weren't home by Christmas. In the current war in Ukraine, it's utterly unthinkable that anybody should win, and so on. Wars do not work because they're destruction. Peace does work. Peace works in a session like this. Peace works here in Cambridge. Peace works all around the world, where people just get on and work with one another and respect one another. So that's Christ's teaching, and it is counter to the dominant orthodoxy in the politico-militarist system. And I'll make the point now that most of the militarists are inside government at a whole load of levels and have excluded democracy from that process. And military decisions will be taken irrespective of what happens on the democratic front. Okay, so let's just, and this talk will be simplistic simply because I don't think you need any more complexity. So what are markets? Markets, it seems to me, in Christian terms, are loving your neighbor as yourself, as expressed in work and through producing goods and services. Loving your neighbor as yourself. Loving your neighbor as yourself. Goods and services. Let's just focus for a while on goods. They're more complex than are sometimes recognized. You can't just have goods and put up the whole show. Normally, I mean, my simple breakdown is there are goods, bads, indifference, and correctives. So in the food area, oats are good, cigarettes are bad, well, you don't eat cigarettes, but you know what I mean. Candy floss is fairly indifferent, and indigestion tablets sort out if you've got problems. Okay, but having a good is much more problematic than we recognize, because goods involved how you live, and how you live is a complex issue in terms of stewardship before God and in terms of living with your neighbor and your family and all the rest of it. So having cars on a road that travel at 120 miles an hour seems to me to be entirely bad. And we should do better than that. And coaches, which can economize on fuel and road space by about 10 or 15 times, are much better than fast cars. That kind of judgment needs to be made. So we come to, and so goods, we get goods wrong. And nowhere have we got goods wrong worse than when we turn to weapons. First of all, weapons are produced to kill and destroy. That's true of swords and spears. I just remind you that the cross was the Roman Empire telling the Jews, we can do this to you, we control you. So right at the center of the gospel, in a sense, there is this conflict between what weapons do and what the word of the Lord is. So some weapons are defensive. You put armor on your bodies, you have tanks or battleships, but really they still occur in a context of killing and destruction. And broadly speaking, the efficiency of killing and destruction has improved with the technologies of the last two centuries through to nuclear weapons. That's gone on. And let's not be superficial with the business of killing and injuring. Weapons destroy 10, 100, or 1,000 times the amount they cost. You knock down a whole load of flats with a bomb, and rebuilding the flats is going to cost a great deal. I mean, the estimate that's come out of Ukraine is $650 billion of destruction caused in a few months. That's the kind of stuff we're dealing with. And so let's just reflect on this good that has come on into the world. It's a good that, at the best, kills and destroys on a massive scale. And at worst, it kills and destroys on a massive scale. At best, it does nothing. We congratulate ourselves if we don't use nuclear weapons or don't use any other weapons. I'm sorry this is so depressing for everybody, but I've been depressed for a long time about it. And it's the subject that's depressing, not us. And so at best, you just don't use the weapons. Soldiers march up and down with them, or you just practice with them. And then eventually they go to a graveyard where they wither away and die. And that's it. And of course, we've had something like 100,000 nuclear weapons that haven't been used since 1945. And they've cost trillions, and none of them has been used. So their price is infinity, or as close as we can get to it. So I think the issue is, how is this perverse market for the whole of humankind being constructed? And if we look at the history, it is very complex. First of all, at the way Christianity has been defeated time and time again, even great Christian proponents like the 19th century pacifists, who weren't just saying we withdraw from war, they were saying, this is what's wrong with the whole military setup. And people like Tolstoy just should be read and opened up again, so that we understand what Christian pacifism really means. But this market was constructed, and it was constructed, going back to the last talk, on an industry of lies and And appeal to falseness. So the appeal to falseness is you must be strong, you must be able to dominate other people and this, that, and the other. And Krupp and Armstrong and Vickers and Snyder did this. We were, Britain was great because it had a Maxim gun that could mow down the natives and all the rest of it. And so the whole thing got underway, and you could pit one side against another, you could sell to one side and then the other. And you could do bribery, because when people bought weapons, once they bought them, the situation built up and wars were generated. And I mean, I might be old and cynical, but on my study, detailed study of 150 years, a whole load of wars have been fairly deliberately created by those whose business it was to make money out of them. There's a very nice cartoon after the First World War where a little child is asking her father, who is an arms manufacturer, "Daddy, what did you do in the war?" And the answer came back, "I did everybody." That's about it. So we could go through a whole number of, I mean, this isn't an anti-Glaswegian point, but the American Civil War was lengthened considerably by the South buying battleships from the Clyde shipyards, which enabled them to carry on their trade and business for another year or two or whatever. So that was part of the pattern. Krupp was very closely linked with the Kaiser and against the Social Democrats. Gladstone found himself powerless to resist the marketing of the naval lobby at the end of his premiership. And so it goes on. The warlords win over both democracy and the Christian principles of peace and neighbor love and service. And often the weapons are sold, as I've said, through bribery. Zakharov used to leave bundles of notes on the table. During the Lockheed scandal in Germany, they were saying that Lockheed agents were hiding in filing cabinets, and BAE Systems, our own great arms firm, hired a Boeing 747 so that the Iraq royal family could bring their shopping home from the US as part of their bribery program. It included peacock blue Rolls Royces and gold-plated dinner services. The Iraqis turned down the silver-plated ones and so on. So often the weapons are sold cheap to start with. Once you're in, then the prices go up. And, of course, once the war arrives, you can charge whatever you want, and away it goes. And so, for example, the Iraq war, which was based on a lie, involved no weapons of mass destruction, was against the United Nations, against international law. My understanding is that the main impetus of that came not even from the Pentagon, but from the arms companies and the arms industries and so on, who facilitated that process. And of course, Blair and Bush fell in with it. So mostly this is a great big push, and it's an idol. You worship the thing that we have created, namely weapons. You look for new weapons, you promote new weapons, and it goes on and on and on. And the fear of weapons and war keeps the population docile. Okay, now, I'd been reading the Gospels for 60 years before I woke up to the fact that Jesus might be saying something slightly more than "don't be scared of spiders" or something when he said "don't be afraid." And really, of course, it's "don't be afraid of those who can kill the body." When you kill that fear, when you really kill that fear, you open up the way to peace, and you make peace. You make peace. Is that difficult? No, it's easier than what we do now. How do you make peace? Well, first of all, you don't put turkeys in charge of Christmas because they won't vote for Christmas. So you don't put the militarists in charge of peacemaking. that was the mistake in 1932. That was why, despite this massive impetus that's been hidden in history, despite this massive impetus, the disarmament process foundered in 1932. People just didn't understand what had happened, how this had been killed off, but it was killed off. And so what you need is not the peace, not the militarists, not the governments as it presently constituted, because they won't do anything, whether it's Boris or American presidents or obviously Putin or Xi. So there has got to be some awakening that occurs. Now, we've got 2 billion Christians around the world. Maybe, just maybe the Christian community could wake up to this in a big way. And how can it be done? It's actually very simple. I've spent months on this. It might seem simplistic, but you cut weapons by 20% a year for 5 years and they're all gone. You get the arms companies to cease production immediately and subsidize them down 80%, 60%, 40%, 20% to zero to transfer to other patterns. And surveillance is easy because if you can find Mrs. Thatcher's handbag in Iraq, you can find out any weapons that are being produced illicitly all around the world now. So we could do it. We could do it, and it would be easier than what we're doing now, and the peace dividend would be vast. And the healing of the nations would take place. And the question is, do we want the healing of the nations, or do we want to stick with weapons whose main purpose is to kill people? And the best they can do is actually not to be used at all. And my final point is that if we sold tea bags on that basis, that we hope you won't use them at all, not many tea bags would be sold. So maybe this is a sensible idea and the gospel carries weight.
Many thanks, Alan, for that very important talk. Any questions, gentlemen?